this week. Silver held support over 20, the XAU moved higher, and U.S. equities finished at the highest level in nearly a decade. Welcome back, everyone. Chris Walczak with you again. Well, every rally eventually leads to a consolidation, and that's exactly what gold and silver did this week, which is good news for investors seeking to increase exposure to the world's best portfolio insurance policy. Joining me with their take on the sector, head of Trends Research Institute, Gerald Celente, gives central bank monetary operations a new name, Ponzinomics. He's not a big fan, to say the least. We discuss the economic situation and the implications of a Brexit and even for Italy to potentially leave the EU. Then Peter Grandich of Grandich & Company rejoins the show with comments on precious metals. He's convinced that the physical bullion market is finally overtaking the massive paper shorts. He says potential EU disintegration is leading investors into the sector, noting that the new uptrend in gold and silver could be sustained for years to come. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with another big must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the market weather recap. Partly cloudy skies appeared over the precious metals this week. There was a touch of profit-taking for the first time in about 2 months. By Friday's close, the yellow metal was off only $40, about 3%, finishing at $13.27 an ounce. Silver, still near the highest point in 2 years, was off only 18 cents, about 1%, finishing over $20 an ounce. Precious metals XAU was off just about half of a point and half a percentage point, closing at $107.73. The shares are still approaching, though, that 200% gain from peak to trough this year. West Texas Intermediate crude added $1.50 per barrel, closing above $46.65, adding about 3.5% for the week. Well, bullion recoiled from a 2-year high, with gold still higher, though, from the lows by around 30%, silver by 50%, amid very low odds of a Fed rate hike for the next 12 months. According to the Fed Funds Futures odds, policymakers will hold rates steady by a wide margin over a quarter point hike well into next year. Low rates make precious metals and in particular, their dividend-yielding shares particularly appealing. Additional positives holding the metals up. News: the world's second-largest economy, China's economic growth was 6.7% in the second quarter. That topped the 6.6 estimate, with solid factory output, retail sales, and new lending. Meanwhile, Soros Fund Management's biggest holding by value remains a gold company. That's right, Barrick, the world's biggest gold miner. The company's shares are now higher by 172% this year alone. The Toronto-based company is lean and mean following cuts in expenses and divesting unproductive assets, dropping $9 billion in debt. Hedge funds are following Soros' lead, adding shares of Barrick, who has 20 million of his own shares, with billionaire Stan Druckenmiller adding 2 million shares to his hedge fund, according to SEC filings. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, with the central bank QE operations in Tokyo as well as EU, clearly investors focused this week on U.S. equities, which resulted in a much-needed pause that refreshes. Currently, gold, silver, and the XAU are holding above support, and I expect a consolidation to send the precious metals higher. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, sunny skies persisted over the New York Stock Exchange for the third week running on solid U.S. retail sales and related domestic economic figures. The Dow Jones Industrials added 369 points, 2%, ending at 18,516 for the week. The S&P 500 climbed about 32 points, 1.5%, closing at 2,129, while the NASDAQ Composite picked up 73, 1.5%, climbing back above 5,029. In related news, about $4.6 trillion has entered the global equities since June as the U.S. economy outperforms projections and policymakers continue to show little signs of higher rates amid expectations of more QE, thanks in part to the U.K. Brexit vote. Both the S&P and the Dow closed at new bull market records. That's the highest levels in nearly a decade on robust consumer and manufacturing numbers here on the heels of the exceptional unemployment rate figure from 2 weeks back. Healthcare shares climbed the most, as well as drug developers, with Biogen and Celgene Corp leading the way this week. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, the fear-greed index soared to the highest level in years, showing signs of extremely frothy conditions in U.S. equities. The current uptrend seems to be fueled primarily by safe haven money flows out of the EU. I expect better bargain opportunities later this year. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. While there are many gloom and doomers, every now and then a prognosticator hits the bullseye, and we call it prophetic. Gerald Celente fits this description to the T. His 2016 prediction for panic, well, unfortunately, it's unfolding right before our eyes.
Well, you know, the whole market situation is nothing more than a, they call it Abenomics over there in Japan. Why don't we call it by its real name? It's Ponzi-nomics. It's just one big Ponzi scheme. And all they've been doing is pumping more and more stimulus into the systems, raising the equity markets with, you know, the availability of cheap money that's boosted stock buybacks. They're on another tear right now. That's what's driving the markets up. I'm not making that up. You could read it and find it. The stock buyback trend is booming again. They're borrowing money for basically nothing and buying back their stock. And by the way, the money going back into buying the stock isn't going back into building the companies. And that's why you have this such low productivity and not very many new things happening. And the other end, of course, is the merger and acquisition activity. So it's Ponzi-nomics. And when I talk about that, you just saw what happened in Japan over the weekend. Last Sunday, they had an election. Abe Shinzo Abe's party gained some real strength there, so his ruling party coalition now allows them to do another round of Abenomics, more quantitative easing. They're already at negative interest rates. Maybe they'll go a bit more negative. The market skyrocketed over there in Asia. And this is, now remember, we're looking at the Nikkei that was down over 18% since the beginning of the year. It was down 25% below its June 2015 high. And then in 2 days, 3 days, it spikes nearly 8% on the news that they're going to do more stimulus. Wonderful. The first two rounds of Abenomics are a quantitative failure, because that's all politicians are. Well, no matter what country you're in, since he's been in office, the economy's grown a grand total of 2.4%. So now they promise more stimulus, the markets around the world skyrocket on more failed policy. So it's Ponzi-nomics. The gamblers can't kick their habits, and they're just feeding them more money to keep their habit going, with more and more of these scams going on. This is unprecedented in world history, and we have to make this very clear. This is not capitalism. Capitalism is dead. You don't do these things in capitalism. Capitalism rises and falls on its own merits, not being jerry-rigged by central bankers. And again, you look at, by all quantifiable measures, the first two rounds of Abenomics miserably failed. Oh, and here's the other part of it that really makes perfect sense, Chris. There are $11 trillion, the nation has an $11 trillion debt. Debt to GDP ratio is 245. Debt to GDP ratio of 245. They have an $11 trillion debt. Now they're going to pile more debt on top of that. So you can see where this is going. And by the way, that's one of the reasons why I believe, you know, after they had the positive job numbers in the United States last Friday, and of course, you know, gold took a hit, it didn't take a big one, because you can see where this is all going. And listen to the Fed speak. No one's talking about raising interest rates anymore. And now more quantitative easing. It's just devaluing and debasing the currencies, this digital currencies printed on nothing and backed by nothing, and with all this debt. And that's why you're seeing gold, I believe, stabilize. And again, I don't give forecasts, of advice rather, but we do trend forecasts. And where our forecast is that the next downturn of gold, if it goes below, let's say, the 1250 mark. We're hanging around 1350s. To us, that's the last downturn for gold. And what we're forecasting is that when gold goes over $1,400 an ounce and stabilizes above that, the next hit is to a spike toward 2,000. And again, you know, go back to even when gold, you know, was well above 1,900 back in 2011, accounting for inflation, it still never recovered where it was when it, you know, hit its peak back in 1980. So gold's really never totally recovered from its 1980s high.
But, you know, one in three Americans, Gerald, do not have that luxury. The headline reads today like, I think, like a page torn out of a Stephen King novel. Not one in three Americans has $500 to cushion. One in five have less than $100 in their savings account. Almost half of Americans don't even have $1,000.
It's because they've turned this into a neo-feudal society. You have an economic elite and a political nobility. And again, the numbers are there in front of everybody. Those are some of the numbers you read. But go back to Obama getting into office. Since 2009 to now, I'm not making these numbers up, 1% of the population got 95% of the wealth created. We're talking about the equity markets. People aren't like the old days, you know, where people bought stocks and got dividends and, you know, you played the market for what it is. Now it's algorithms. It's a whole different game. And then you look at the other numbers, 62 people in the world. This is an Oxfam report. 62 people, everybody knows 62 people, have more money than half the world's population combined. So it's in a neo-feudal society, everything is concentrated and different laws, different rules for the, as I said, the economic elite and the political nobility. So it's a neo-feudal society. All the wealth and different rules are in place, as I said, for the economic elite and the political nobility. Go back too big to jail under Eric Holder. This is the guy that was that didn't prosecute one of the White Shoe Boy firms, criminals, excuse me, the Wall Street gang, for breaking the law. Not one of them went to jail. And now Eric Holder is working with the White Shoe Boy firm that kept those people out of jail. So it's a neo-feudal society. That's why you have all the poor people. It's Slavelandia. The jobs that are being created, I mentioned the great job numbers that came out last week, but when you look at the job numbers, here, this country's lost over 5 million jobs in manufacturing in the last 15 years. We've created 5 million jobs in what they call leisure and hospitality, bartenders, waitresses, waiters, people working in you know, hotels, making beds and cleaning. You know, not that those are degrading jobs if they don't pay money. And in the healthcare sector that doesn't pay money in that sector, part of it. So it's a neo-feudal society. That's why the numbers that you're reading are ringing so true. The facts speak the facts.
I want to move forward here today, though, with Italy, third largest national economy in the Eurozone. It was an original founder of the EU, eighth largest by nominal GDP in G7, G8. Being of Naples extract, how significant do you view this Italian referendum? Could it lead to something like the Brexit or maybe even something bigger?
Well, I think it's going to lead to the Brexit. They want, of course, you know, change the Constitution in some issues. But, and again, the big issue, of course, is the Italian banks that are under so much pressure. And their stock prices are collapsing because of the EU rules also, where they have the bail-ins. Very large portion of the bondholders in Italy that own bank bonds or, you know, that were coerced into buying these bonds. And it's under severe pressure. So it looks like they're going to be trying to bail out the banks, even though it's against the EU rules. But they know that if they have a banking crisis there, you know, they're really in trouble. And then you look at the whole banking situation. As I keep saying, Chris, follow the money. And when you look at the banking problems, the money problems are right in front of everybody's eyes. You're looking at banking shares, you know, Deutsche Bank, Societe Generale. You know, you're looking at bank shares down like, what, 47%, 50-something percent across the board and throughout Europe. So the warnings are really, you know, they're in front of everybody's eyes. And again, it goes back to these negative interest rates in part as well, because banks can't make money loaning money out. at negative, you know, with negative interest rates, they need higher interest rates to make more money on what they're loaning out. And the second part of it is, of course, they've overloaned. And they have, and the banks in Italy, for example, they're burdened with bad debt, and heavy with loans. So, again, as I keep saying, follow the money.
Basically, gold up approaching 30-35% this year. You've already given a bit of a solid forecast on what we should look for if the floor holds up on the metal. And I think the if there is important. Can't see the future exactly. Do you expect the central banks to continue accumulating the metals?
As you pointed out, you know, the person doesn't have any money. You know, so what do you do? You know, again, I don't tell people what to do. I just tell them what I did in my lifetime. And I advise young people, for example. Matter of fact, you know, we're having a conference here in Colonial Kingston, July 22nd, 23rd. And one of the speakers is coming in, two speakers are Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert. They have the shows on RT, Russia. And Max told me many years ago, you know, what he's been doing for very many years is, every time he has a little bit of extra dough, he buys gold and silver. Every month. Every month. Buys a little.
And he knows what's going on in the markets because he was an insider. He was a big trader on the street.
That's right. And with the times of, you know, the 1987 stock market crash. So he's been around. And so what I'm saying is it averages out. So I bought my first buy of gold at $187.50 an ounce back in the late 70s. I think it was 78. And now we're talking around $13.50. So what I'm saying, what I advise young people to consider, I tell them, listen, if I were you, what I would do is I would buy what I could afford in gold and silver and just put it away. It's like you don't even own it. And just keep putting it away and keep putting it away. Year after year, month after month, keep putting it away. So then when you get to be a guy my age, you've accumulated a lot of this stuff. And you don't have to, now, and I say to them, for example, what would you rather own in 20 years from now? A Japanese bond that's paying a negative yield, which means that when you cash it in 20 years, you get less than what you bought it for? Or do you think gold is going to be worth more in 20 years?
If you had a small stockpile of gold and silver coins, or you have a bank account, or a trading account, or a margin account with the same amount of cash, in 5 years, which one do you think is going to be worth more? Because I would argue that the way we live today, our lifestyles, our grocery bills, tuition, all the rest of it, at the end of 5 years, only value at all is that small piggy bank of gold and silver.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Again, you're seeing gold prices, Chris, stabilize because it's very clear that they're saying it, that they're going to keep interest rates low and they're going to continue to stimulate. By the way, they can't raise interest rates in the United States. The dollar is going up despite them not raising interest rates, and this is a threat to all the emerging market debt. You see, what happened is when they had the first rounds of quantitative easing, one and two, and all of that, when dollars were very cheap, all this money, this hot money, flowed into these emerging markets, and companies and countries borrowed heavily in dollars. And this is when commodity prices were also very high, back in 2011 again. So now what's happened, commodity prices have collapsed virtually compared to where they used to be. All of these resource-rich nations that borrowed all this money, these emerging market nations, now have to pay it back as their currencies are declining. That's why they can't raise interest rates. They'll shock the world. They cannot pay back the debt the way it is already because they're selling less of what they used to sell, and they're getting less money for it. So if interest rates go up, you're going to see a shockwave hit the equity world. That, and we're forecasting it, by the way, it's going to be much worse than the one that hit back in 2008. It will be at the 2000 and or the 1987 level. Kind of crashed, you know, the over 20% declines. And also, very important to understand, one of the reasons why you're seeing stability in these markets after they do be turned volatile is, again, capitalism is dead. They have plunge protection teams. What do you mean, plunge protection team? You're going to the casino, you're gambling, and now the casino's losing money, and you say, okay, we're closing the casino down when I'm winning?
40 years of the plunge protection team. It started with Reagan's administration, right?
Exactly. It started under Reagan, and it's continuing. And so now you have it also in China with the national team, and throughout, it's in all the countries. So it's a rigged game. So what I'm saying is that the market conditions should be much worse than they are. Everybody was freaking out about Brexit. When did Brexit happen? June 23rd. This is an ancient history. What's changed since now and then? Again, it's a rigged game, and they're going to try to do everything they can to keep gold prices down, because when gold prices go up, it shows the weakness of the central banks, the fiat currencies, and the very, very weak economies. Again, you look at the facts, and the facts speak for themselves. You just saw it with their beige book. And what are they saying? Moderate to tepid growth. Economic activity increased at a modest pace in most regions. Modest pace, modest to moderate. And that is after all of the stimulus. And again, when you look at the Fed's track record of calling the shots, you look at the minutes, they hold them, of course, for 5 years. And so we forget what really happened 5 years earlier. And this is in the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we invade other countries to spread freedom and democracy, and they hold this stuff back from we the little people, like they hold up the 9/11 reports and everything else. When you look at their facts, they call it wrong all the time. So here we are, the wage pressures. That's the other one. Wage pressures were modest. Wage pressures? You were just talking about how people aren't making any money, and now they're talking about wage pressures? There's no recovery. It's a cover-up, and it's a cover-up worldwide. We see signs of crash.
You talk about maybe worse than 2008 or even 1987, but what are the odds that we could see 1929 or worse?
Oh, the odds are there. Again, look at the numbers that just came out again in China. You know, with their imports and exports down again. Greater than expected, of course, the term that they always use. So you're seeing their imports and exports. So if China's not exporting and they're not importing, and when you look at going back to the commodity prices and what I was saying about emerging markets, you know, China's gobbling up like, you know, some 40% of, you know, the copper, you know, the iron ore, the nickel. You know, they're big consumers of it. So if their imports are down and their exports are down, can anybody see what's going on? It's very clear. And then, by the way, you look at the luxury brands. Burberry, for example, 40% of their sales are down. You know, 40% of their sales are in China, and they're way down now. And that 40% number plays across in a lot of different sectors, whether it's luxury goods or commodities. So if China isn't manufacturing, you know, that means the consumers aren't buying. Consumers aren't buying. China is not manufacturing. Then the emerging markets are not selling their raw materials and commodities. So it's a very clear process of where this is going. And as we see it, it's going down. And it is definitely a scenario for a crash.
All right, Gerald Celente, please tell our listeners today how they can get a copy of the Trends Journal.
TrendsJournal.com or TrendsResearch.com to see all that we do. We have a Trends Journal, History Before It Happens. It's a quarterly. And, of course, we have every week a Trend Alert, every month the Trends Monthly, and every weekday night Trends in the News broadcasts. And, of course, we have conferences throughout the year. We're having one on July 22nd, 23rd here in Colonial Kingston, New York. Unfortunately, we're sold out. If anybody wants to come to this one, the next one will be in December. So we suggest you sign up now to reserve a spot. And also, Chris, I know that you mentioned the numbers and how difficult it is for so many people. So we have a discount request page because we know people are going through a hard time.
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci. Ciao, ciao.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
It's a pleasure to welcome our featured guest today, Peter Grandich of Peter Grandich & Company, a market specialist and aficionado for over three decades on Wall Street. Welcome back, Peter Grandich.
Glad to be here, Chris. Thank you.
I'm sure you're feeling a bit vindicated, as are many of our guests here on Gold Seek Radio. That's our bread and butter, and that's the precious metals. A fantastic year. Lots of fireworks on the upside. A spectacular 4th of July fireworks display, you might agree, in the silver market, briefly touching 21 per ounce. So we haven't seen numbers like that in a couple of years. Do you see the powers that be losing reins over the manipulation in the markets, or is there something bigger at play?
I think it's a whole combination of things, including what you just mentioned. I think the first and perhaps most important and comforting factor is that in past cycles, when we've had sharp rises like this, gold and silver for a short while became front page news. It is not. I've called this, in fact, I just wrote about it the other day, the stealth bull market in gold and silver. It's certainly not in the United States, and maybe not even in Canada, widely talked about. And that's good news. That's why I don't think we're anywhere close to any meaningful correction. I think at best we'll see consolidation. In fact, when the recent employment number was released a few days back, we saw a very brief, I mean, you blipped your eyes, you got the normal $20, $30 down move, but unlike past years, that was quickly bought into. And that just tells me that the physical market, as I think we all felt sooner or later, and it took later, I think, than most of us thought, is overcoming the paper market. And part of that, Chris, is because gold trading itself is moving from being dominated here in the U.S., in particular New York, and being moved to Asia and particularly China. And that's an important thing that we all said, that once we saw that in earnest, the paper and the manipulators would have a far more difficult time influencing the gold and silver market. And I think that's been clear and evident here in 2016.
We're certainly seeing signs of that in the markets here, and virtually every index you look at, from gold, silver bullion to the XAU, HUI, pick a leveraged ETF. We've seen it before, too, haven't we, and been disappointed over the last 5 years. Why is this time different, please?
I really think this is the key factor why you always know you're going to get bit when you say this time it's different. But one of the things I think that's different this time is we never had 29% of all global debt right now is yielding below zero. It's unheard of. You said at the outset that I'm in my fourth decade, and when I entered interest rates of 21%, if somebody ever told us at that point in time, sometime in our lifetime, we'd have to pay the government to keep our money holding for us, I would have. But I think that's it, because people, again, not so much here in the U.S., but outside the North America, have recognized that not only has there been a currency war, there's a war of countries. We're seeing the beginning of the end of the European Union. And gold and silver are playing their rightful role. And when you need to go to zero interest rates, you know that monetarily wise, that's highly, highly favorable for the metal. So I think that's probably the single biggest factor different this time than any other time when we've had rallies in the gold and silver market.
Do you think it's short-sighted to focus on events like just Brexit and a potential exit with Italy and other EU nations considering referendums and things of that nature? Is this more systemic globally?
I think it's a series of things. First of all, I have written extensively this year to my readers saying that this is the year when America faces its biggest social, political, and economic crisis in its history. I think two of the three are already here. I think the social and political are clear and evident. The economic has been forestalled because of what the Fed and what other central bankers have done. But that, in turn, has created better results down the line because of what they've done. Let's just take back, we just talked about these recent employment release that came out, 287,000 after a month before there was only 30-something thousand. Well, first of all, 90% of that job growth was people 55 and over. One of that factors is because people can't retire or have to go back to work just to stay afloat. And 50% of all job creation was in areas where it was around minimum wage payment. That's why wage growth is so slow. So even, and one other thing I would like to point out, if people didn't already by this time that this is aired, and that is that we have had just terrible reporting on a month-to-month basis. And the reason is, every month there's major revisions. The previous 2 months were revised by more than 50%. So it will not come as any surprise that this 287 number gets revised dramatically lower when the next number comes out. So I just think there's so many things come together, almost a perfect storm for gold and silver. And what excites me the most, it's really not getting any real coverage. And so long as it's not on that front page and, you know, your friends are talking about it that normally don't even know how to spell gold, I just think we have a long way to go on the upside.
You know, I have a friend in that category. Sent an email message the other day, absolutely perplexed as to why nothing was being said about silver on a major outlet that will remain nameless here. Investment and Financial TV Network had made virtually no comment on the silver explosion, the eruption in price over the past several weeks, but in particular this week. That's really a good sign.
Yeah, Chris, and it is, because, first of all, let's always remember one this, and I've been saying this for as long as I've been in and around the financial markets. We're never going to see the general financial community and almost all the media that lives off of it speak in gold and silver in a positive way, because it flies in the face of what those people make a living off of, and that's financial assets. So that's the first thing you have to accept. The second thing is, so few people participate in the sale of this versus equities and bonds and other things related. So there's not a sales-driven reason for those people to speak about it. But normally by this time, we get what I've always coined the don't worry, be happy crowd, at least coming out and so-called, forgive the pun, panning gold and silver. And we haven't even had that, which to me is very, very good. And I think this is more of a sophisticated, physical-dominated move. We couldn't understand a couple years ago. We saw so much reports of strong physical buying, yet the prices were going down. And that was because there was a change of hands on who owned it. We've moved so much gold out of the West and into the Far East, and the Far East wasn't about to bid it up until certainly they got a lot of what they owned. And by the way, also, another factor which isn't being discussed, and that's the Chinese currency really, in a sense, being devalued dramatically, something that had not happened before. And I think the Chinese see that and are major, major buyers of gold. If you look across the spectrum, whatever currency you would look at, gold did exactly what it was supposed to do this year and protect people of loss of buying power. And while people will get excited about the stock market because it may now be up 1% or 2% of the year and get all the news, and you say to yourself, well, why isn't anybody talking about something that's up 30, 40, or 50%? Don't let them, because eventually those are the people we're going to need to sell to at much higher levels.
And I also like your panning for gold analogy. I think that allows the rest of us in the know to use our automated sluice box methods for greater expected returns. Clearly, you remain in the bullish crowd here. It's nice to be right. Give us an idea where we might see some cracks in the foundation of these theses. What event would make Peter Grandich nervous on a forward basis for the metal sector?
Well, if there was suddenly, for whatever reason, which would seem impossible at this point, but if there was suddenly a dramatic change by central banks and they all started raising interest rates, which is an impossibility, I think as we get into the third and fourth quarter, we're going to start to learn of several countries, not just one or two, but several, looking to remove themselves from the European Union or distance themselves from it. I think that's going to cause central banks to remain on the soft side. If for some reason, people always say, can the government create a law and come and confiscate my gold? Yeah, they can create anything they want these days. I think the chances of that are so slim, you would need a microscope to see the percentage chance. But what I, like I said, is this is a very different and much more healthier and well-established foundation for a very long-term, substantial move up. I think the first order of business, I think silver has reached a good objective. I think gold needs to get above and stay above 1,400. I think once that is the case, I think any argument that this is somehow a rally in a bear market. We had another group, which, by the way, they were at 1,050, saying it was only a matter of days till we were going to fall to 800-900. And, of course, the media covered earlier last week their announcement now that gold once again is heading down to 1,000 and so forth. I think it will remove the last fear or thought that this is somehow still a rally in a secular bear market. So if and when we have a few prints, especially a couple week closes above 1,400, I think that then sets up, and it could be a matter of months or it could be a year or two, that we will make a move to the old highs. And I want to remind people, I don't sell this stuff. I don't sell anything that gets bought because people are fearful or need to go hide in a cabin or buy dry food. I'm just looking at this as an asset class, and I think gold and silver will not only be among the best assets class for this year, but I think they have at least a few years in front of them where they'll be up there with the leaders.
You know, there's been a lot of bullish rhetoric and hubris in the markets over the past, let's say, 15 years or 16 years. Certainly seemed prescient up until 2011. And now we're starting to see signs of, at least by the pundits and the folks here in the gold crowd, are getting excited again. What are the odds that not only might we see the former bull market peaks, but start to set new records in the next few years?
You have to also say that while some may live and breathe it, I don't anymore. It's been a few years since I've been active on a day-to-day, intraday basis in the metals and mining industry. But nevertheless, even at the peak, I think we still were such a small percentage of participants versus the overall group where people are involved in the stock and bond market. So even if you told me what's ever left of the precious metals community, because the last few years seen a dramatic devastation in that area, it's such a small amount of people compared to all the people that are jumping up and down right now on Wall and Broad, you know, talking about Dow 20,000 or whatever the story may be of late. And so I just don't get concerned about sentiment factors at this point, because I know in my work that I do here in the U.S., when I see people that we see for planning and estate planning and business planning, I don't think one out of 1,000 purchased gold, silver, or anything related to it in the last 12 months or the last 5 years. So I know the market was so strong that there's some money is going to leak out of that, and it won't take much, not even 1% of what may currently be in stocks or bonds, to move towards the metals market to see astronomical returns. So I just think all systems will go here. There's always something that can come out of left field. But right now, I think this is probably the best I've seen metal situated for a rise in a couple of decades. So although, like I said, it's not my main livelihood anymore, but at the same time, nevertheless, I still need to look at asset classes, and I just don't see really anything except something so strange that so few people may collect or buy that's going to outperform gold and silver for at least the foreseeable future.
Well, you know, your point about small markets relative to the bond and, of course, stocks, markets with hundreds of billions of dollars traded daily, it's very important. I mean, if you just took a look at maybe Amazon, which is on our recommend list for years now, just take one of those companies and imagine if just a fraction of a few of those shareholders of those companies redirecting those huge profits, or institutions, pension funds, the Warren Buffetts of the world, the Soroses. There's so many now. I mean, there's hundreds of billionaires redirected it towards these relatively tiny gold and silver markets, and even much more minuscule mining shares. And then, of course, the junior miners.
I don't know specifics anymore because I haven't looked that close, but it wasn't too long ago when one or two of the top-owned equities, which these days would be the high flyers, the Googles, the Facebooks, whatever, their market cap was bigger than the entire market cap of all known gold and silver and base metal producers. I'm certain now that just one of them, because of how devastating the bear market was in the metals and how much some of these went to the upside. So, like I said, that's just one of the stocks that a lot of people own. If you just get a crumb of that moving in. And I, by the way, the way that move will come in is when we really start to see acceleration in the upside. Your friend who spoke to you, silver would be viewed as a small market, maybe won't get the same attention if gold went up that percentage. And I think if and when gold gets to close a few times above 1400, you know, into the 1410, 1420, there is going to be such momentum buy signals and such renewed institutional interest, that's when you'll turn on. And even on that four-letter financial network, somebody will have to talk about it because it's going to be so dynamic.
Well, as we wrap up here, you know, I would just add a couple of small anecdotes in line again with your comments. Just as we saw the ridiculous momentum on the downside, where fundamentals were tossed out the window because these markets, the leverage out can overshoot on the downside. I mean, talk about overshooting. Look at the XAU. I think it returned to its year 2000-2001 starting point at the absolute nascent bull market 15, 16 years ago. So luckily for us, these markets can also get momentum in the other direction. And that's what we hope to see, some momentum continue to pick up steam on a forward basis. Please tell people more about Peter Granditch and Company, some of the services you provide, how they can find out more, where they can direct their web browsers and get in touch with you.
Sure, Chris. Peter Granditch, and that's GRANDICH. So it's one word, petergranditch.com. Everything that they need to know and learn about, including signing up to receive whenever I post on our blog, simply provide your email. If they just go to petergranditch.com, everything is self-explanatory there.
Thank you, Peter Granditch. Have the best weekend.
Thank you, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garnero, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome to the show President and Director of Gold Source Mines, headquartered in Vancouver, Canada, Mr. Tsitos. Just excited to find out more about Gold Source Mines, which engages in exploration and development of mineral properties. The key company project, Eagle Mountain Gold, it's 100% owned in South America. In addition, Gold Source holds 23 coal mineral licenses in Saskatchewan, Canada. Welcome, President Tsitos.
Thank you very much for the invitation, and I'm very glad to talk to you.
Well, sir, we're happy to have you, and I wondered if you could outline your professional background and the reasons that led you to this exciting opportunity at Gold Source Mines, please.
Yes, I'm a physicist, geophysicist in background, and I have close to 28 years experience in the mining industry. I started as a young explorationist and going and working through the jungles of the world. But I was very lucky and privileged in my career to work for the biggest miner on earth, an Australian company called BHP Billiton, with whom I was for 19 years. So I was exposed into exploration for 11 different commodities worldwide, and have done business on the exploration and mining front in 32 countries. So I'm in the last 15 years, I'm living in Canada. I left the big mine in 2008 when I wanted to pursue kind of a junior venture capitalist kind of dream for me, built up a couple of new companies, and one of them is what is called today Gold Source Mines. We got extremely excited because in 2010 we recognized the value of a serious asset located in South America in a very friendly country called Guyana. And this is a gold deposit which we invested a specific amount of money, more than about $7 million in the last 5 years on the exploration front, and about $6.5 million now on the development front in terms of making the mine. And obviously, by recognizing this value, we thought it's an asset that can grow over time to become a much bigger production level.
Well, we appreciate that interesting background of yours, as well as the overview. The top analyst here, precious mining sector analyst Peter Spina, has chosen your company as the top opportunity for aficionados. Before we delve into this exciting flagship property, the Eagle Mountain Gold Project, if you'd like to give a bit more of an overview on Gold Source Mine's strategic mission, some perspective on the growth and your plans to increase growth in that area to help this company maintain its trajectory as a leading precious metals company.
Yes, the vision of the company is to become a medium-sized gold producer. We are focusing at the moment all our efforts in this country, and especially this project called Eagle Mountain Gold Project in Guyana, because we see an easiness of extraction of gold, and therefore a very quick return, because the gold mineralization starts from surface in a very easy soft rock environment before we reach the more difficult parts of the deposit, at least 7 to 8 years ahead of us. So we start what we call a phase development approach. In other words, we start with a phase one now development, and we have built a team of experts in Canada, but especially in Guyana, engineers that are mainly Canadian, American, and Guyanese, and obviously operators on the local front. So we have built up an exceptional team that has done this before in other parts of the world. In Indonesia, we had successes in Mexico, discoveries in South America, Ecuador, or Australia. So this team comes with a combined 250 years of experience. And I'm talking about the management, the officers of the company, and the directors of the board. So fundamental number one in these venture companies is to have a good team. And that's what people like Peter Spina or others that are very loyal to us, they have recognized the value that comes with the management team.
Oh, it's so important. The intellectual capital that the right minds bring along is essential. I wonder if we could turn more specifically to the Advanced Eagle Mountain Gold Project in Guyana. According to your company literature, this region is very mining friendly. It's English speaking. It's a very politically stable democracy. GoldSource completed a financing there, raised $7 million, most of which, of course, is geared for the phase one and the mining there on that project. Operating cost of $480 an ounce on gold, making it a very profitable venture. Please tell us more.
Yes, we managed to achieve in the last 18 months significant milestones in order to make this vision that I said before a reality as we go. And there's no better timing than discussing this thing now, because this is the beginning of the development as we speak now. These weeks, we are commissioning the mine. So coming back 18 months ago, we completed an amalgamation between two entities. We did produce independent stage engineering reports that confirm the resource by third parties as it is required by the exchange, Toronto Stock Exchange Venture. We achieved a mining license, therefore permitting in Guyana to develop the deposit. We have done significant environmental studies, and most importantly, as you said, we managed to attract, in very difficult times, I would say, for this sector, an investment of $7 million by specific parties located in New York, Singapore, and Canada. We catapulted then with all this kind of money, project, team that we are building over the last 9 months into a construction phase. And this construction phase is now more or less at about 90 to 95%. We just put an announcement yesterday, a public news release out there, and I encourage people to check on CEDAR.com, www.CEDAR.com, where all the Canadian junior companies on the mining space present their news, or come to our webpage at www.goldsourcemines.com, where they can find the news release or any previous news releases and any technical reports or financial statements. What we announced yesterday, effectively, we said, yes, indeed, we are developing the project on time and on budget, if never say at the budget, what we budgeted about 9 months ago. So that's rare in this space. We are there starting next week with independent engineers of the people who produce the plant, which was bought in Canada, Mexico, United States, and England, are coming to Guyana, these engineers, with our own team to commission the mine. So we expect first gold to be produced before Christmas, and as we said to the public, within the Q4 of 2015. Completing your question, the big bet for us is to prove this concept. So we have put all these numbers out of independent engineering and internal engineering reporting that predict that given the economics of our project, the location, the cost of fuel, cost of labor, you know, all the parameters that go into making a mine and producing gold, that we target to produce gold on all-in cash cost under $500 to, as you said, $480 per ounce. And then if I load on that Canadian overheads, sustaining capital, and all the other expenses of the company, inclusive of legal costs, for example, everything, salaries, and so on, will go to less than $630 per ounce. Still to be proven, but that's what we are going to do in the next 6 months. We're going to come back to the market and prove these numbers, which will put Gold's mines into the lowest quartile on the cost production stage of gold.
You know, another interesting aspect of the Eagle Mountain Gold Project involves your strategic partnership with key shareholder IAM Gold, a major player in the sector. I wonder if you could outline how this corporate affiliation is creating synergies for Gold Source shareholders.
Yes, it definitely created more synergies earlier in the phase of the project on the exploration side. We got a lot of some technology transfer and so on, but most importantly, the people like in IAM Gold recognize that they like this investment and they haven't sold their stock, for example. They have been loyal with us. But even beyond them, I would say IAM Gold now is not that big following the dilution that we took last year when we raised the $7 million. It's probably to a level of 5% on the company. Management, insiders, I would say, and that gives comfort to any other investor that, you know, we believe that much in the project that we control about 16% of the company collectively. And at every round of financing, we are also purchasing some additional stock for ourselves. So, which means that this is a great project, and we believe in the long-run development of Eagle Mountain. But in addition to the goals of what it's going to do with all this cash flow down the line and so on, and the way we want to expand. Then we have a New York fund that controls another 15%, and some private equity in Singapore controls about 15%. And we have more than 700 shareholders in Canada and United States that are ranging on smaller amounts.
I wonder if you could outline the exploration efforts as well as coal resources located at the Gold Source border property.
The Saskatchewan border property, it's a coal property. It's nothing to do with gold, obviously. At the moment, it's an idle project, but the company spend a significant amount of money to discover the deposit. It was an own discovery. I mean, I would say, to be fair, it was before my time joining as the president of this company, but the management, other members of the management that are longer than me here, obviously played a significant role, like Eric Fear, our chief operating officer, who was, Scott Driver, fundamental in discovering the border property. This is energy coal. Obviously, the coal prices at the moment are suffering hugely into this market, and that led to the point where this project needed much bigger capital expenditure in order to move ahead. So we don't lose the property. We have titles that will be valid for quite some time, waiting for the right opportunity with any third party or ourselves exploiting that when we do have indeed some cash flow, free cash flow, to invest in additional projects beyond gold. So that's, but it's a significant resource, is a massive project, can become a world-class deposit producing more than 30 to 50 years. But obviously, as you understand, big projects need big capital, and these times are very difficult for the mining space, for people to achieve this big capital.
I wonder if you would be willing to provide any specific management decisions that you anticipate in the years coming forward that could offer your shareholders a strategic advantage.
Yes, that's a great question, Avalis. This is, in any business, your listeners will understand timing is everything. And that is not really, kind of defined within the mining industry or the venture capital industry, but timing indeed is everything. And there's no better time, as I said earlier, for people to do their own homework and understand the value or the real value of the assets we control and the way that the Gold's management will drive this company. So we have specific milestones ahead of us. Milestone number one is obviously proof of concept on Eagle Mountain and therefore moving to a full production stage. We expect 2016 year to be a full production. But the project, as I said, has been developed in a phased approach. In other words, more expansions will come in the next 3 to 4 years on a constant basis. So we do expect every 6 to 12 months, we put additional capital from free cash flow to initiate additional capacity. We start at about 1,000 tons a day production, and we will move to more than 4,000 to 5,000 tons a day within 4 years, as we have outlined in the independent engineering reports. At the same time, we want to improve recoveries of gold. In other words, you know, we put better machinery, better processing plant or equipment on site. And rather than diluting shareholders for that, we thought we will get that out of free cash flow. That's why your previous question about $480 gold is so important to be achieved, because we want to exploit the profit margin and keep reinvesting this money into the project. So any shareholder or future shareholder here will see a constant appreciation of what's going to be the true output of this company. On top of that, obviously, opportunities will start be creating on passive approach. People, you know, come and talk to us already about acquiring or JV other projects, or on proactive approach. We do have significant amount of network in this region, but worldwide too. We have some targets, but I learned from very young in my career to do small steps and do the bigger ones when we do have this capacity and especially the free cash flow. So we are very careful at the moment. We are focusing the development of Eagle, but no doubt we will, you know, expand on the business development side too, and get grab any opportunity that will create or enhance the vision here to catapult the company to medium producer scale. So in a few years, this company will be significant out there, and that's why people who come now at this kind of valuation, they will definitely see the reward when the amount of ounces is going to justify different price and ratios and so on.
President Sitos, as the discussion winds down here, do you have any other parting comments, perhaps any topicality that I have not mentioned today that you'd like to leave with the listening audience?
Yes, I would like to say a couple of things. First of all, Guyana, because not many people know about Guyana. As you mentioned earlier, it's an English-speaking country. Actually, it's the only English-speaking country in South America. It used to be a British colony. It used to be called, actually, British Guyana, and it's small in the map, but a big size, like size of United Kingdom country, occupied by 720,000 people. The resources extractive sector is one of the biggest, if not the biggest part of their GDP. So therefore, you understand the law, the local law is very pro-mining on this kind of front, but it's a law that's based on British standards, and therefore, even for us as Canadians here, we can protect ourselves. So, I mean, expatriation or profit or pay out dividends or some things down the line is no problem. So it's you're allowed to do anything, and even when we consolidate our books between our Guyanese subsidiaries and Canadian companies, you know, we have no problem because they are same accounting principles, okay? So it's a secular democracy, very stable, and there are no problems on this front from an environmental or social perspective, not accepting mining, for example. So it's a good benefit, and risk mitigation for us as management has been a very important thing here. And many people don't understand mining. Sometimes they think it's only about how much gold you have in the ground. I would say the biggest risks in this industry is how easily you take your gold out, especially the license to operate in a developing country. So we have covered ourselves, we have hedged ourselves on that front, and we believe very highly of the local environment. And the people that we have as Guyanese operators are very nice, educated people. I really like this country, and as you understand with my previous career, you know, I have tested, you know, numerous countries, and I do see that some of them stand out, and one of them is Guyana for sure. Infrastructure, we didn't talk at all, is great. The project is very close to an airstrip, about 8 kilometers away. It's a big town of 4,000 people with an airport. We do have a road, so you know, we are not deep in the jungle. In other words, we can take gold out of our location with helicopter from our helipad or through a plane, a fixed wing, or we can move people very easily and equipment on the site, which obviously lowers your operating costs. So there are a lot of good benefits. I would like to encourage your listeners to check more about the company by going to our website, understand also the risks before they take any decision, understand the resource, the mineral resource that exists there. But we are very proud to say we have achieved a lot of things in the last 18 months. We had our heads down and working 12 hours a day to achieve what we want in the next 12 months.
And I just mentioned to folks, you can direct your web browsers to goldsourcemines.com. And that's all one word, goldsourcemines.com. There'll be plenty of links available for you if you'd like to visit their site and bookmark it, please. The ticker symbol, GXS.V. Well, President Sitos, we'd just like to thank you for taking time from your corporate schedule today to share the details of this very exciting opportunity at Gold Source Mines.
Thank you very much, sir, for your time, and thanks, the listener, for spending their time to listen to me.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. Supply chains are integrated systems that allow for the sequence of processes involved in the production and distribution of a commodity. I recall a corporate speaking engagement early in my career in 1990. A manufacturing entity in the Midwest had recently completed the introduction of the JIT, or Just-in-Time, delivery system. This had been refined in earlier decades and allowed companies to increase their efficiency and decrease waste by receiving goods only as they are needed in the production process, which reduced inventory costs. Successful just-in-time delivery requires accurate demand forecast, which can be anticipated and managed. However, just-in-time delivery is vulnerable to sudden, unanticipated disruptions in the supply chain. Those unanticipated disruptions, those outlying events, can stop production in its tracks. I was traveling this week, and a local municipality issued a water boil alert. People weren't too panicked. Restaurants still functioned. They served soda, milk, coffee, and tea, because the water in the coffee and tea was boiled. However, the McDonald's drive-thru had no fountain drinks. With their meal packages, they gave a bottle of water in lieu of soda. At the grocery store, the 24 packs of bottled water had sold out. The water boil alert was going to remain in effect for several days. Apparently, water pressure was low for about 10 minutes, below the legal threshold, which says if pipe pressure goes below 20 psi, things can become contaminated. No word if it was a bad pump that caused the low pressure, but it was fixed, and the boil alert remains until the water tests out okay. Water systems are another form of just-in-time delivery. Low water pressure for even 10 minutes can cause significant disruptions. Whether it's aging infrastructure, storms, accidents, or something else, thinking about and being prepared for disruptions of any scale is always a good exercise. This was small in the scheme of things, but could have been much more involved. Whether this specific incident is infrastructure related or not is irrelevant. Infrastructure, in my opinion, and its replacement across cities and towns of all sizes is going to be the trend for the next several decades, and part of future QE. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garnero, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. Thank you.